Sarah, I was like, "Hey, do we have anything to do on Friday?" She's like, "No, why?" Because I don't usually ask. And I was like, "Luke Cage comes out."
See, I thought it was this past
Yeah,
Friday.
no. It's like I just want to watch it all.
Yeah, that's what I did with Daredevil. Like I,
I think it took us like 2 or 3 days.
yeah, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil season two took me like 2 days. And that's why I'm pit. Like I work Friday, Saturday, but I think like next like Sunday. That's probably my Sunday is because I don't care, give a fuck about the NFL anymore.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Experience the untold story of the timeless legend that is Mr. Dave Bisella.
Timeless as ever.
That is Mr. Dave, right on time as usual. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Experience the untold story of the timeless legend is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, we'd love to hear your guess, and you can send it to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your guess to us via Twitter at Movies on Up, or you can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, we will fly a prize package right over to you, full of all sorts of fun and magical items, not the least of which are DVDs and pins of a really old design that Morgan did for us a long time ago. But that is only if you can answer what movie experience the untold story of the timeless legend comes from. This week, we are continuing our vampire theme. We had done just a couple days ago What We Do in the Shadows, which is one of my favorites. It's one of my favorite comedies recently. Certainly one of my favorite vampire movies of a recent vintage. One of our co-favorites from the 80s is Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys, from 1987, starring Jason Patrick, Kiefer Sutherland, and Corey Haim. It opened number two in the box office on July 31st, 1987, with just over $5 million behind Timothy Dalton's first flick in The Tux, The Living Daylights, La Bamba, RoboCop, and Summer School all round up your top five there. Lost Boys went on to gross over $32 million, which would be good for 2,338th place on the all-time list, just one spot behind the Mike Myers, Justin Timberlake train wreck from 2008 that folks seem to love to hate.
The Love Guru?
It is The Love Guru. That's the bad news. The good news is that it is one spot ahead of a much better sports movie from 1976.
Longest Yard? Or North
the
Dallas?
The bad Sport. News is you're wrong.
Oh, Bad News Bears.
It is the Bad News Bears. 16 spots higher than that in 2,322nd place is another kiddie baseball movie, The Sandlot, and the criminally underappreciated Nightcrawler comes in at 2,328. So that gives you a little bit of context as to where The Lost Boys falls in on the all-time charts. It is always lost on me, no pun intended, that this is a Joel Schumacher movie.
I did want to make that point. It's one of those, I have such an affinity for The Lost Boys. I love The Lost Boys. If you ask me who directed it, I think about it. Like, I'd remember that it's a Schumacher movie, but it's one of those things like, oh, I go to it on IMDb. Oh, yeah, I forgot Schumacher did it. Like,
and I think that's because it's relatively early in the Schumacher run, which certainly reached its peak in about the mid-90s with The Batmans, A Time to Kill, The Client, etc. I think Falling Down was maybe a little bit earlier than that, but he became, much like a director that we'll talk about next week, Peter Jackson, that went from a relatively small director to a guy that was like, that's Peter freaking Jackson. This was just on the uptick of Joel freaking Schumacher.
Probably my favorite Schumacher movie, though.
Oh, The Lost Boys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had to think off top of my head, because I'm going to look. But I'm pretty sure this is probably my favorite Schumacher movie.
I like a handful of them. I like me some Falling Down an awful lot. I do like The Lost Boys.
Falling Down, A Time to Kill, 8mm, those are all solid.
8mm I like too, but I hate being the guy that says that I like 8mm. I don't know what that says about me.
That's California. Oh, and Flatliners.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got some solid ones, but I still think I'd put Lost Boys over all of those.
Fair enough. It is kind of maybe odd or surprising is probably the word that this is a Joel Schumacher movie. he wasn't really the first choice to direct the movie. That would have gone to the producer, Richard Donner, who was going to direct this before he had to drop out to make the holiday classic that...
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, indeed. I think Donner made a great choice in Schumacher. Obviously, the guy ended up being a very, very competent director. But you have a movie that features kind of a young adult cast. So why not get the guy that made St. Elmo's Fire with a shit ton of young adult actors that made a pretty competent movie, got good performances out of all them. So you kind of give him the reins of another young adult-led movie.
Yeah, and I mean, this cast, Jason Patrick, who... one of the weaker parts of the movie, he's still acting. Corey Haim, not acting anymore. Diane Wiest, fantastic. Ed Herman, still around. Kiefer Sutherland, designated
still
survivor.
Acting.
Jamie Gertz, Corey Feldman, Jameson Newlander, Alex Winter. There's some coolness in there. Like with Jason Patrick and Kiefer Sutherland and the Coreys at the time, there's that coolness there.
Certainly... there is a coolness, but it wasn't exactly the way this movie was supposed to go. The original concept for the story called for like a more Corey Feldman at that time aged cast. It was supposed to be like Goonies kind of thing. The idea was Peter Panistic, if that's even a word. There's this super interesting figure that comes in to our protagonist's life that can fly and never ages, which sounds like it could be either Peter Pan or a vampire. And I think that's kind of a lot what we get from David and his merry band of vampires. This idea of, fuck it, let's just have a good time.
Yeah, and that's all they're doing. And yeah, the Lost Boys and Peter Pan were more the Corey's age at the time. And this is them a little older. But when you are that age, you're invincible already and you're going to live forever. So why not just make it official?
It's probably not going to surprise you that a movie that's called The Lost Boys has a lot of Peter Pan in it. I believe David's character's name was supposed to be Peter. The dog is Nanook, and I think the dog in Peter Pan was Nana. Wendy is the mom. I think Jason Patrick's character was supposed to be one of the brothers from Peter Pan, but that was switched too. I do think that Lost Boys kind of represents a little bit of a line in the sand on vampire movies. I feel like pre-Lost Boys, your vampire movies were, they're horror movies. Vampires were monsters. This was a scary movie. And there certainly are elements of that here, but I think there's as much, almost as much comedy as there is horror in it. And I think that the movie really is more about refusing this urge to grow up and to stay young and be relatively irresponsible. And there are a ton of vampire stories post-Lost Boys that kind of focus on how cool it would be to live as a vampire instead of playing it for a horror. Interview is a lot about life as a vampire, Interview with the Vampire. Near Dark, I think, flirts with that. Your Twilights are all about that.
Well, they're also about werewolves.
Well, they are about werewolves as well, but it's...
And teenage love.
And teenage love. But that's it, though. It's about, like...
And there's a lot of incest in there, too.
And baby sex, right? Doesn't that werewolf have sex with a baby?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They hook up.
They get it.
SMA, I think. Is her name? SMA.
Oh, I don't have any idea. I actually didn't make it to the last book or last two movies. I'm not sure. But I have it on relatively good authority that a werewolf does it with a baby.
Uh-huh.
That took a sharp left.
Humanized vampires is your point.
Yes.
This is like the first one. It wasn't your Dracula. It wasn't your Vlad the Impaler who turned into Dracula. This is vampires are people that have become vampires. So this is a person that becomes a vampire.
Right. And I like the movie, but I do think that it can be a little bit unbalanced. I think the first half to two thirds of this movie, we were really immersed in that Peter Pan syndrome, and it's kind of fun as David's trying to lure Jason Patrick into becoming one of them, showing them what that life is all about, how much fun it is. It's just hanging with your bros and a chick who's cool, so she's like one of the dudes.
Smoking hot.
That too, growing up as a guy, having a group of guy friends, there was always that smoking hot chick that was just cool to hang out too. That's kind of a given.
You know what I think a weakness is in this movie, and it's probably an unpopular or minority opinion. I feel like the Frog Brothers are one of the weakest points. I'm not a fan of the Frog Brothers.
And we'll certainly get to that.
They're from a different movie.
Right. I think they're holdovers from that Goonies part of it. But certainly, I think when the Frog Brothers do kind of show up and do their thing at the end of the movie, at that point, it sort of does become less about the humanization of vampires, and it's more
and
about, like, right, it's kind of a straight up vampire movie that we're accustomed to seeing, like being assaulted by these vampires, having to repel them. Vampires bad. We go through the first part of the movie like,
oh, vampires are cool.
Right, they're cool. Oh, but now there's that other side of the coin and they're bad. And that I've seen, you know, trying to kill vampires in movies for years and years and years. So I think it kind of loses sight of, to me, what really kind of makes the movie cool is that cool vampire thing.
I mean, there's a lot of cool. It's a cool movie overall. You have
it
a cool
is,
young
yeah.
cast. It's cool to think of in high school becoming a vampire. And then the climax is very cool. We talked about it, or we will talk about it. I don't know what year this is. In the Peter Jackson Dead Alive episode, we talk about cool deaths and
right.
how people tune into horror movies for that. You want to see how Jason kills, how Freddy kills. In this, it's kind of flip-flopped. And in zombie movies, it's how do you kill zombies.
Right.
In this, it's how do you kill the vampires. And the vampires have very cool deaths. Death by stereo, the bathtub. That's the cool part. It's Home Alone with vampires before Home Alone.
Right.
But that's all it is. The climax is Home Alone with vampires, and it's awesome.
I don't disagree that it is. It's kind of fun at the end. I just feel like at some point the movie just kind of runs out of steam on the vampires are cool and just says, all right, well, I give up.
Now they're just evil.
Right, yeah. Now we're just making a vampire movie. I do like the cast. It was real early for Jason Patrick and Kiefer Sutherland. Patrick is fine, whatever. He's,
I mean, Speed too. Come on.
Right. He's sort of the default lead in this, although I feel like everyone else you pay more attention to, and specifically Kiefer. David had to have a ton of charisma. He's the Peter Pan. He's got a pull you into this lifestyle, and he's
still
phenomenal.
Be mysterious.
Yeah, still be mysterious, but to the point where whatever this guy says, become a monster, a creature of the night.
Yeah.
All right, well, you look cool doing it. I'm going to look just as cool.
Kiefer's really, really good in this movie. He is this leader, this de facto leader, the coolest of the cool, almost recruiting, almost against his will. It seems like he's hesitant about Patrick at first, but sees it in him.
He's not as cool.
Yeah. So that is a cool aspect of him. But there's no other side to him. The whole time, he's the same thing. There's no, like, relatability, like, humanization of him. He's just this badass vampire the whole time. I think Diane Wiest in this movie is really, really good. Is this mom who just located her two teenage sons to a new place and is single and wants to go on with their life, but has two angsty teenagers, and they just moved in with their dad. So it's, she's got a lot going on, and I think she pulls it off really, really good. I really like her in this movie filled with, like, young, cool. The mom really brought it all together.
She did, and I do give Corey Haim a little bit of credit for that, too. This is a Corey's movie, and they're both there.
In the loosest sense of a term.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
they're
the
just
loosest,
they're there. It's not Dream a Little Dream or License to Drive.
Right.
It's centered on them.
Right.
They just both happen to be there.
It's the loosest of all of the Corey movies. But Haim does have a bit to do in this. He does have to carry a large portion of the emotional baggage. It's not a buddy movie with Corey Feldman. You see Sam in this movie, and he's got such a love for his older brother and genuine concern for him, just like Diane Wiest does as well. But Corey Haim is kind of the principals, he's kind of the one that does have most of that emotional stuff to do. Jason Patrick's, hey, look cool, look somewhat reserved. Kiefer, just look cool. But Corey Haim's kind of the one that has to.
Because Corey Haim's in this new town. You know, his mom's kind of doing everything she can to support him, so she's not around. All he has is his brother,
right,
who's not around. So there is a lot for Haim to do. And Haim was a competent movie star.
Yes.
Like, he turned into a punchline. But pre-Lost Boys and within the non-Corey stuff, within a couple years of it, he was a legit, I mean, Silver Bullet, Watchers, Lucas, stuff like that. He was a good movie star. And this is one of his better performances because he did have a lot to do. Fitzpatrick, I think, is the de facto lead, but I think you could say the same for Haim. Like, right. They're both there at the center of it, whereas Patrick was more even keel. Like, I feel like Haim had so much more to work with, and I thought he delivered.
Yeah, he's kind of the inverse Kiefer, whereas he's trying to pull him one side, Haim's trying to pull him the other.
The anti-cool, which sums up the Corys.
Yeah, kind of. You have sort of this dynamic between... It's not going to get to the level that I'm going to describe, but it's a bit like Johnny Utah and Bodie, a little bit in Point Break. Like, they're kind of broing out to a certain extent, where Bodie is absolutely, like, the coolest dude. And he sees a little bit of that in Jason Patrick, in Johnny Utah. But then you've got your little brother kind of, like, trying to pull you back from that. Like, he meets some cool friends, and he's like, oh, no, they're a bad influence on you. You really shouldn't hang out with them. I mean, I don't have a little brother, so I don't really know what that relationship is like, having a naggy little brother. But I thought Corey Haim was really, really good in the movie. And certainly, we had mentioned that it's not a Corey's movie. Haim and Feldman weren't the Frog Brothers in this, and the movie wasn't really centered around them. You could have made this a buddy movie where the Frog Brothers, basically you have Home Alone, but with vampires, which I think was sort of done, not the Home Alone part, but you did have your Frog Brothers buddy movie in The Lost Boys, The Thirst, which I believe was the third.
I didn't watch either of the two fake sequels.
Well, yeah, I mean, those were direct-to-DVD. And I think the lack of interest in the Frog Brothers movie kind of shows that that's not what made The Lost Boys good. It wasn't the Goonie-like frogs. Right. It wasn't about them, but it was about how appealing life as a vampire could be.
Yeah, and this dynamic with the brother aspect of it.
But not the Frog Brother aspect.
No, yeah, no, not that part. I like the Haim and Patrick relationship, where he felt this obligation to kind of be there for his brother because they're both in this new world. But yet, there's that age gap, so he's older and he needs to go do his own thing.
It's a lot, I guess, to be thrust in that parental role for a younger sibling when you're still a kid yourself, and getting to hang out with people your own age is certainly different than hanging out with a much younger sibling. And when those people are immortal, I could see where that would be. And there's a smoking hot chick that's kind of into you. I can see
has a kid, maybe.
I could certainly see the pull in that. You mentioned some of the cool deaths of the vampires in this. One guy that doesn't get a cool death is Kiefer. He gets impaled at the end of the movie, gets impaled on the antler horns, but doesn't explode or doesn't turn to dust at all. He's just kind of there.
Yeah.
That was on purpose. The thought was David lives. There was in the works, and Schumacher shopped it for quite a while, never could quite find a script that he wanted for The Lost Girls, where David was supposed to, I guess, decide. It was kind of fun hanging out with Alex Winter and crew, but it was fun to have one smoking hot chick, so let's try and just get a harem of smoking hot chicks, which does seem more out of the vampire playbook.
Especially if you're Kiefer, and if you're 1987 Kiefer Sutherland.
I feel like 2016 Kiefer would probably do okay, too.
He's a pirate.
Yeah, so David was supposed to live for the sequel that we never got. I believe this is one that I'm not sure that it deserved quite the expanded universe, to borrow a Star Wars term, that it got. There were some comics that I think David makes an appearance to that were a prequel to the actual Lost Boys sequel, The Tribe, which was direct to DVD and only had one of the Frog Brothers, the Feldman Frog.
Jameson Newlander's scenes were cut in that movie.
Okay.
In The Thirst or The Tribe, whichever the second one
was. It was The Tribe. Corey Haim shows up at the end of that one as Sam. He's now a vampire.
Really?
Yeah. They filmed a lot of stuff with the Corys. It all happened at the end of the movie. In one of the versions, he is a vampire. In another version of the movie, he mentions that the other Frog Brother is a vampire, and he's coming to get him. But then you get the third movie, and the aforementioned Frog Brother does not begin the movie as a vampire. It didn't deserve all of that, though I would love to have seen a sequel with Kiefer.
A direct sequel would be awesome. Yeah, not one 20 years later that nobody cares
about.
We
did get a sequel 21 years later with a Sutherland, and it was Kiefer's half-brother, but not Kiefer. It was kind of like here's some of the stuff we think you like about The Lost Boys. We got our Corey Feldman. We have Ace Sutherland. It's the same. It's like having...
It's Tyson Perry's Moderner.
It's like one of the Olsons. Maybe not the really talented one that you like, but it's one of the other two.
They're icons.
The Sutherlands or the Olsons?
The Olsons.
Yes, they are. It certainly did seem like trying to throw one past you. This movie, a really good 80s vampire movie, in which that was a decade where we did have a couple good ones. The Catherine Bigelow one.
Near Dark.
Near Dark. Yeah, I like that a lot too. And that was a little bit Lost Boys-like. Certainly more of like a Western with vampires in there. 80s with Fright Night, it was a good...
Fright Night was good.
Yeah, I think I like that one better than Lost Boys. Different kind of movie.
Different kind of movie. Yeah. It's tough for me. I think I like Lost Boys more just because of the coolness factor, but man, do I love me some Fright Night.
For sure. Obviously, we didn't necessarily love the sequels to The Lost Boys.
I didn't watch them.
But they are, that is a franchise that just keeps kicking. Much like David, you think he's dead, but he's not. I think it came out maybe about a month or two ago, by the time this episode actually drops, that the CW is picking up a Lost Boys show that is from Rob Thomas, not the guy from Matchbox 20.
iZombie and Veronica Mars.
Yeah, and Party Down. I'll throw that one in there too, just because that was, of those three shows, that's the one I watched. I liked it an awful lot. It's supposed to be kind of an anthology of sorts, following this group of vampire characters through a different decade each season, spanning roughly 70 years, starting in 1967. So I guess if you do the math, the first season's the 60s, the second season would be the 70s, the third season is the 80s, so perhaps some kind of crossover with the movie. Are you in favor of that?
Envisioned for a seven-season anthology-style run.
Right. Because they're saying, you know, they want to span 70 years, I think that's kind of saying that they'd really like to go seven seasons.
It's envisioned right. For a seven-season run.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's, they want to go seven.
They want to go seven. But what do you think about trying to do?
No, because unless you young Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War, Kiefer Sutherland, and they just come across him and they don't turn him. Dude turns them.
Kiefer's probably going to be a little expensive at this point to try and get on the CW. I'm honestly not sure if it's going to follow David's character anyway, but certainly you could maybe run across two young scamps that are the Frog Brothers. Again, not that they're the best part about The Lost Boys, but they seem to be, in addition to Kiefer, something that people remember, some kind of touchstone to the original movies, I guess.
That's where I lose interest in stuff, is when they try too hard. I don't need it. If you're going to make a good Lost Boys show, make a good Lost Boys show. I don't need the tie-in to the movie.
Yes, I really do kind of agree. Again, what's interesting to me is not the Frog Brothers, it's life as a vampire. And I think it'd actually be kind of cool. What I like about Interview with the Vampire is that these creatures are such long-lived that you do get to see them from the 1700s, and you get to see all that. So you get a little bit of a period piece, a different period piece, and then it's contemporary. That idea is kind of neat. It's like Mad Men, you know what I mean? Like, you could watch the society change throughout the run of that show, though it didn't take 70 years. I would love to have seen this, instead of taking place over 70 years, maybe it takes place over 200 years, but that probably costs a lot more. And again, we're talking the CW here.
Yeah.
I do like Rob Thomas. I've watched a couple episodes of iZombie. Sarah likes it a lot, so I watch it.
It's dead Veronica Mars.
When it's on.
So I dig it.
I've not seen the Veronica Mars.
I've seen a few episodes.
I've heard, what are you, a marshmallow? Is that what they call him?
Is that what you're called? Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. That's what I call you. But certainly that dude's got some talent. There's enough stuff on the CW that I think is relatively cool. Sarah likes that. We like
the
Flash.
100.
Well, I don't know anything about that. But they do seem like they do vampire shows. They got that.
Vampire Diaries.
Yeah. And there's
the
that other
others
one.
Or whatever.
The Originals, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if one of those ended and they needed
Vampire
a new...
Diaries, I think, is dead.
Okay. So maybe
they staked it.
I was just going to say, maybe they want to stake their claim to a new vampire
David
series.
Ryan, talk teen TV.
Yes. Teen TV on up. When we finally get tired of doing this show, maybe that's what we'll do. We'll do a podcast entirely devoted to the CW.
I forgot The Flash was on the CW.
It is. Yeah. And now Supergirl is too.
I don't care about that.
I don't either, but and Arrow. I feel like we ought to get at least $50 from the CW this week for promoting their entire fall lineup.
And we think.
Probably. I think Supernatural's still on the air.
I think the 100's a show, right?
Yeah.
About those space people.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
The space humans.
There was also another show on there. I think it was about, like, Scotland or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
I used to hear the commercials. I used to do the commercials on the radio. That's why I remember. But yeah, apparently Lost Boys, one of our favorite 80s vampire flicks, is going to be turned into a TV show, and it will be on the CW. Check your local listings. Let us know what you think about that. If there's any other 80s movies that you would like to see turn into a television show, how great would a Monster Squad TV show be? I don't know. I always just kind of fall back to that. More Monster Squad anything.
Yeah. I'd be for.
But that's going to wrap it up. We're going to put a stake in our Vampire Week, mercifully. Next week will be a week entirely devoted to Peter Jackson movies. We're trading in vampires for some zombies and ghosts and zombie-like ghosts. We'll be doing Dead Alive next week and The Frighteners. Then to finish out the month, we've got Saw and our Halloween episode. So at this point, we're kind of almost at the peak of the month of Halloween. So we hope you're enjoying it. Instead of trying to put together a list every week, it's fun to just watch movies that we really, really like and then talk about them for a while. And we'll be doing that at least for about the next week and a half. So I guess until next week, until we go down to New Zealand.
Yep. Keep it up.